With U.S.-China trade talks about to restart, the U.S. hits a key Chinese company with criminal charges. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The U.S. Justice Department has revealed charges in two cases involving the Chinese phone maker Huawei. One set accuses the company and its chief financial officer, who's detained in Canada, of lying to banks to evade U.S. sanctions on Iran. Then there's the case involving the dismemberment of a robot named Tappy. According to that 10-count indictment, Tappy was developed by the U.S. company T-Mobile to torture test mobile phones under development. And as we hear in this T-Mobile video from 2012, the company and its engineers are very proud of Tappy's work poking away at phones to see if they crack.
There was no way to test a lot of phones in a short amount of time, and so we provide a robotic way to break phones.
According to U.S. authorities now, Huawei had worked aggressively to steal Tappy's technology to the point that Tappy lost an arm. For an explanation, let's turn to the BBC's Asia business correspondent Karishma Vaswani in Singapore. Good morning.
Good morning.
So according to the U.S. Justice Department, Huawei really wanted to know how this robot worked, how it ticked.
Yeah, the allegations are pretty astonishing, aren't they? The charges, rather, allege that Huawei employees, as many as three of them, tried to take one of the arms of the robot and package it back to China. Another aspect of this, of course, is the fact that Huawei has said that this is a settlement, a case that was actually settled already, for which it was found to have breached the partnership agreement with T-Mobile, but has been quite insistent that it hasn't violated any U.S. laws. And I think that goes to the heart of the debate between the two sides, because, of course, things like stealing intellectual property, the other charge, which is about deliberately deceiving the U.S. financial system by doing business with Iran, all of those things really strike at the core of the relationship between the United States and China.
Let's talk about timing. All this comes just a couple of days before U.S.-China trade negotiators get back to talking, right?
Yeah, and these are the highest level talks between the two sides since we've seen that trade truce back in December. You know, when you look at the charges, it is very difficult to believe the Commerce Secretary's statement that this has nothing to do with the trade war. Huawei and the significance of the timing of these charges will certainly be seen by the Chinese as a way for the U.S. to use Huawei as leverage in trying to win its case against the Chinese.
That's the BBC's Asia business correspondent Karishma Vaswani speaking from Singapore. Karishma, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's do the numbers. The 100-share index in London is up 1.3%, but Dow and S&P futures are down slightly, a tenth percent. The benchmark 10-year interest rate is down at 2.74%. Oil, with U.S. sanctions on oil-producing Venezuela, are up 0.9%, $52.44 a barrel in New York. Prescription drugs can do miracles, but they cost a fortune, and you've seen the direction of prices not down. Well, today, the House Committee on Oversight and Reform puts pharmaceutical companies into the spotlight. Marketplace's Erica Barris reports.
There isn't much transparency when it comes to drug prices, says Yale economics professor Fiona Scott Morton. The list price for a drug doesn't always match up with what the insurer pays or what the wholesaler pays or the retailer or the customer. And there actually isn't much competition, meaning that with
only one or two firms in the market instead of many, and that leads to high prices.
That's even though there are thousands of drugs on the market, says Gerard Anderson with Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, which makes the rising prices
contrary to what you would expect from an economic perspective.
Anderson's testifying in front of the committee today. He says drug prices typically increase during periods of innovation. Pharmaceutical companies say the cost of research is baked into drug prices. But again, there isn't much transparency. And
the cost of doing research seems to increase each and every year
far faster than the rate of inflation. So he's going to ask the committee to look at why that is. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
These are turbulent times in Britain. Its parliament and its population are in an uproar divided into Remainers versus Brexiteers. Amid the cacophony, melodies of protest, with the emergence of at least three protest singing groups, requires. Veteran Marketplace contributor Stephen Beard reports.
For this song, we'll sound in a circle, please. Bassist here, altos separate from sopranos.
In a snug little community hall, the choir rehearses its repertoire.
One, two, three, four. Young and old and white and black, join us here today. We must defend our services and make the bankers pay.
The repertoire, says the choir's founder, John Hamilton, covers some of the burning issues of the day.
We've sung some songs about fracking, housing shortage, library cuts, public sector cuts generally, things like that.
This song protests against privatisation. Strawberry Thieves is a socialist choir, so the causes are left-wing. Protest singing, says Hamilton, is just as effective as chanting or waving a placard.
Singing is a very nice way of uplifting people's spirits, I think. Marching along together. Chanting can get a little bit tedious after a while, so it's a change.
The singers can be drowned out, as in this recent anti-austerity march, but choir members Cheryl Coyne and Martin Vickers insist they can still get their point across in spite of the racket.
And to actually hear a song coming through, people really appreciate
and
it.
And they respond and they'll quieten down for that they'll listen.
Ironically, none of their songs is about Brexit. That's because, like the UK itself, the choir is split down the middle over the issue. Nevertheless, Hamilton is toying with the idea of a Brexit song.
And it might be for all the choir to sing, giving views for leaving and for remaining.
In the same song?
Yes. Because it would be nice to sing together and to show that although we have different views, it hasn't divided us.
That would be a real coup for the protesting choir, bringing some harmony to the bitterest issue in Britain. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Our producers are Victoria Craig, Michael Lipkin, Janaki Mehta, Daniel Shin, and Sasha Woodruff. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.